This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, let's do this. Hour two, the biggest and best in sports, continues on the Big E Sports Show. As always, trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. We are underway in hour two. The amazing lineup. It continues. We're going to talk some NBA news and notes. Our good friend from Basketball Insiders, basketballinsiders.com, Steve Kyler, is going to be with us. We're also going to get you ready for the 2020 NFL Draft. The countdown is on. We are less than 1 week away. But right now, I'm going to pot up the mic. Bring my producer back in, Jack McCraw. Give him a follow on Twitter at JackMC15. And you know what? Since we are on the subject, talking about the NFL draft, I actually want to talk about the Cowboys because Dak had a big dinner, an Easter dinner, over the weekend, which was reported by TMZ. And how much should the Cowboys be concerned with some of his decision making?
Yeah, that definitely doesn't fit the CDC limits. So 30 people guessed, it just seemed questionable for your quarterback and your leader. And Dak has been showing certain signs this year that maybe that leadership or his new contract is kind of getting to him as far as his decision-making on the field and off the field.
What is your perception of Dak Prescott? I mean, some say, did the Cowboys, did they make a mistake by, labeling him, tagging him as a franchise quarterback?
I don't think they made the mistake because last season was one of Dak Prescott's worst years as a Cowboy. A far cry from his rookie year and the previous year in which he beat the Seahawks in the playoffs. I think Jerry Jones is going to take one more flyer on him, and I'm hoping that there isn't a Kirk Cousins kind of dilemma where they just keep franchise tagging him over and over again, and hopefully they can get a deal done sooner rather than later.
And your thoughts on the fact that Dak Prescott is not going to participate in a virtual offseason program without a deal?
That is questionable. That is showing that his mind is on the money right now, maybe not so much on his team.
Well, our mind is on hour two, and I tell you what, we've got you covered. Don't go anywhere. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Love to hear from you. Join us live on Twitter at eradiosportsinfo. At eradiosports.com, podcastarena.com. As promised, in our next segment, we're going to talk some MLB. We are still very optimistic that the Major League Baseball season will play at some point this summer. We are still searching for answers. We've got to remain vigilant. We've got to remain patient. But in the meantime, we want to celebrate baseball. So we're going to take time to power down and get ready for a book review during this coronavirus quarantine. The book that we have selected, it is titled Billy Ball, Billy Martin, and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. And author Dale Tafoya is joining us for the first time on SB Nation Radio. Hello, Dale, and I hope all is well in the Bay Area.
Hi, Alyssa. My pleasure to be on your show, and hoping all you guys are well, too, where you're at as well.
Absolutely. We're just taking it one day at a time, but we are ready to step up to the plate. We want to learn more about your new book. So let's look back to 1979 and the Oakland A's. They hit rock bottom, and they lose 108 games. Take us back a little bit. What happened in that particular season?
Well, it was a rough time, and toward the end of Finley's ownership in Oakland, and the story of Billy Ball is basically about Billy Martin, who, of course, as we know, will always be remembered as a Yankee.
Yep.
He was addicted to the Yankees, but this is a story, Alyssa, of Billy Martin going home and resurrecting the Oakland A's franchise. Billy Martin was born in West Berkeley. And of course, he played with the Yankees. But before he signed with the Yankees in the 50s, he was also a part of the Oakland Oaks in 1948, and he helped the Oakland Oaks here in the Bay Area win a Pacific League title, their first one since 1927. He did that in 1948. And even when Billy Martin was coaching for the Twins, he finished his career with the Twins in the 60s. He hung on there with a coach. He knew when Charlie Finley owned the A's in Kansas City, he knew Charlie Finley, the A's owner, was going to move that A's team, that American League, to Oakland. And he was eyeing that managerial spot. It was on his radar. And Finley was finally able to hire him on February 21st, 1980. But, yeah, free agency had decimated the A's in the late 1970s. And Finley's ownership motto, Elissa, was always to draft players and sign them and keep them for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the players started gaining independence. The Major League Players Association started getting stronger, and these players were able to shop their services to the highest bidder. So it threatened Charlie Finley's ownership motto. And by the late 70s, the A's were just run on a shoestring. In 1979, the A's lost 108 games. They were called the Triple A's, the Oakland Pathetics. They drew just under 307,000. I believe 306,763 was the number they drew in 1979. The A's were a decaying franchise, and Charlie Finley, it ended up being a masterstroke hired Billy Martin in 1980. Billy Martin was supposed to manage the 1980 Yankees, but he got in a fight with a marshmallow salesman in October, and that gave an opportunity for Finley to hire him as A's manager.
The author of Billy Ball, Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's, Dale Tafoya, is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. So tell us, what was the inspiration of this book? I mentioned that you're from the Bay Area. I mean, this team obviously is very close to your heart, Dale.
Yeah, well, you know, I didn't put out to just do a study on Billy Martin. I always respected him as a manager, and this Billy Ball era here in Oakland, it was always a fun era you heard about. I was 10 years old, and I remember seeing Billy Martin all over posters, and Billy Ball was on bumper stickers here. He was the face of the Oakland A's franchise back in the early 80s. And yeah, just studying this era of A's baseball and looking into the bowels of A's history in the archives, Billy's influence, it was very significant. It didn't just translate into the standings. Billy's first year there, they went from last place to second place, and he tripled attendance.
Wow.
And this is something about Billy Martin, Elissa, is that Billy Martin, he connected with the working class in every city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, owners had to really be careful when they fired him because fans would get pissed off and schedule boycotts because Billy was a guy, he would fight for you. And from a fan's perspective, he was a guy you wanted in your corner. And he was unpredictable and entertaining. By 1981, the A's drew 1.3 million fans. And that's minus 22 dates that the 1981 strike robbed. The A's would have drew over 2.2 million. So when owners brought Billy Martin, you're not only going to bring some wins, he was a drawing card as well, and he did that for the A's. And he really made the Oakland A's a pop culture mainstream phenomenon. I mean, Billy Martin was on the front cover of Time magazine in 1991 with an A's hat. All the A's five starting pitchers, known for throwing all those complete games, Matt Keogh, Steve McCaddy, Brian Kingman, Rick Langford, Mike Norris, they're on the front cover of Sports Illustrated. So he really fired up and just provided a jolt for that dying A's franchise.
Dale Tafoya, the author of Billy Ball, Billy Martin, and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. The A's, they certainly did need a leader like Billy Martin to reignite the interest in the team. He was immediately embraced by Oakland A's fans. Who did you interview in this book?
Interviewed most of the A's pitching staff, reporters, Mike Norris, Steve McCaddy, Brian Kingman, other players, Mickey Klutz, Mike Keith, Jim Essien, a lot of the A's players, the young A's players, they were young back then. And this is kind of special about the story, Elissa, is these young players, the Ricky Hendersons, the Dwayne Murphys, the Mike Norrises, these young kids in the A's organization, they were used to playing in front of 700 fans at the Oakland Coliseum. you know. So Billy comes in, triples attendance, they start winning, and all of a sudden they're receiving this unprecedented attention, mm-hmm. and they start winning. And by 1981, the A's, they're a series away from the World Series, but the Yankees swept them in the ALCS that season. But yeah, Billy injected so much confidence in these young kids, and listen, that's what Billy Martin was able to do. He was able to brainwash, and like he would hypnotize these players into winning, and they won. It was incredible, and he did that. He did the same thing to that Oakland group, and to this day, those group of Oakland kids that are now in their 60s, they're still loyal to Billy Martin for what he did there.
It was a magical turnaround, but why did Billy Martin, why was he lured back to New York in 83?
Yeah. Well, Billy didn't last long in any city. He started his managerial career with the Twins in 1969. He led them to a division title. Then he resurrected the Tigers after that, and then with the Texas Rangers, Bob Short moved the Rangers from Washington to Texas. Texas Rangers baseball was dying in 1974. He completely saved baseball in that city. In fact, Bob Short, the owner of the Rangers back then, was quoted as saying, "Billy Martin is the best manager I've seen. If my mother were the manager and I had a chance to hire him, I would fire my mother."
Wow.
That's what he did in Texas. And then, of course, he did the same thing with the Yankees and with the A's. But he just didn't last very long in the city. And he enjoyed resurrecting the A's and managing the A's and keeping that franchise in Oakland. But he had a lifelong addiction to the Yankees, and it played out. And he got fired during the 1982 World Series. The Oakland A's fired him. The Brewers were playing the Cardinals, and that gave him an opportunity to sign with George to become the manager of the 1983 Yankees.
The A's needed a leader with drawing power, and Billy Martin, he saved the franchise. It's very fascinating to find out how he was able to do that. You can check it all out. Billy Ball, we've got plenty of time to read, right? Google that online, Amazon.com. Billy Martin and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. What a true pleasure to have with us for the very first time at SB Nation Radio. Very talented writer. And that is Dale Tafoya. Thank you so much, Dale, and you stay safe, okay?
My pleasure, Lisa.
Yes, sir. Much more coming your way here in Hour 2, the next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it's Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Glad you're with us here in Hour 2. We'd love to hear from you. Chime in on Twitter at eRadioSports, info eRadioSports.com, and podcastarena.com. As always, you can trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. It is time for some NBA news and notes. And of course, the NBA has temporarily suspended the season in response to the coronavirus pandemic. They are trying so hard to determine what's going to be the next step for moving forward during this very difficult time and suspended season. It's great to have back with us from basketballinsiders.com. And that is Steve Kyler. Thank you for joining us tonight, Steve. And we hope you're safe down in Florida.
Yeah, we've been really lucky kind of in this area that it hasn't been as bad as it's been elsewhere. You know, our friends in South Florida have had it rough, but Central Florida's been fairly unscathed. I mean, I wouldn't say nobody, but, you know, not the numbers we've seen elsewhere. And certainly my family and close ones were doing good. So always thankful for that.
Absolutely. Well, this really is a tough time. I think about, you know, this weekend, tomorrow, the NBA playoffs were supposed to start. Who knows if it'll happen this summer or even in 2020. Steve, how would you summarize what has just transpired over the past month from the impact of COVID-19?
Yeah, it seems like forever ago we were playing games, right? When, you know, Rudy Gobert basically tested positive before a game in Oklahoma City, and we run everybody off the court, and that was that. So, shocking. I just don't know that we've ever had anything in the modern era that can, you know, even when you think about the Spanish flu and some of the pandemics that have happened previously, you know, did they shut the world down? and bring everything to a stop. And that's really what it's been. And, you know, there's numbness and weirdness and just uncertainty. And, you know, there's no more certainty today than there was yesterday. So uncharted waters, confusing. I think those are the words I'd use.
Well, I think Mark Cuban said it best. This is the new abnormal, right? I mean, he's spot on.
Yeah, you know, I think the truth of it is, you know, and this is the testament to who we are as humans, right? Our adaptability to condition. And we become pattern creatures that are used to doing things a certain way. And then that changes. And then we figure out a new way to do it. I joke with people, you know, I lived in a time before there was an internet. You know, how did you book an airline ticket?
Yeah.
Figure these things out. You know, I'm standing in a Whole Food or a wholesale store, and they've got plenty of toilet paper here. We're figuring it out.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, a lot of this is just kind of figuring out how to operate and go about life and figure out what's really important and what really isn't. You know, it's the joke some people use: it's hard to change a tire on a car when it's moving. You know, the car has stopped.
Sure.
Now we can make sense of, is this really the car we need to have? So I think you're going to see a lot of adjustment, you know, just as we're all adjusting to using video calls and being home and getting comfortable with delivery services maybe we wouldn't have used before. And do we really need to be out and about to have fruitful lives? And, you know, so I think that's going to be the next evolution of all of this. So that abnormal that becomes normal is adjusting to the new environment. I think we're starting to see people figuring that part out, too.
Our special guest tonight joining us at SB Nation Radio from Basketball Insiders, basketballinsiders.com. Give him a follow at B-Ball Insiders, and that is Steve Kyler. Steve, tell us, how big of a challenge has this been for you and all of your staff, your writers, as far as coming up with material? I mean, you got to keep it fresh. You got to keep the content new. I mean, but that's got to be pretty challenging for yourself. My heart goes out to you.
Yeah, you know, it's been different. You know, normally in the off season is kind of what this feels like when there just aren't a lot of games. It kind of feels like September, you know, August, September in the NBA world when just not a lot of stuff happening on a day-to-day basis. And certainly we're not in arenas and not talking to players, coaches, executives every day like we normally do. But then there's the human part to this. You know, everybody's kind of going through their own version of this. We've got a very virtual and dispersed group. So, you know, some people are our friends in New York. You know, you certainly feel for everything they're going through in New York. And
yes.
I feel that because some of my best friends are part of that group in New York. And then we've got, you know, a great contingent out in California that are in very similar situations. But, you know, I've got friends in Salt Lake City. They're still going to the gym every day. So, you know, it's a little different. And everybody's just kind of figuring out you want to be a human first in all of this and give everybody the time to take care of their household and take care of their family and their kids. And, you know, those kind of things without kind of the pressure of make something happen when nothing is happening. But, you know, there's kind of stuff every day. I think the NBA has done a really good job of kind of trickling things out and, you know, getting players to be involved in things. And, you know, there's more player availability than I really kind of expected in all of this. You know, we've been doing a lot of podcasts and getting, you know, people who have great, incredible stories on and telling their story. And, you know, when you're doing those 35, 40 minutes of time, you do radio, you know, if you can get a good guest for 45
yeah.
minutes, it makes the day pretty easy. So just trying to make the best out of it, trying to figure out what makes sense. Trying not to overwhelm, trying to understand people's attentions are noticeably elsewhere. We see that in web traffic. We see that in kind of the interest in things. So just trying to get life taken care of first. Basketball will be here when we're ready for it, and we'll be here when basketball is ready for it.
Basketball Insider Steve Kyler with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. So I know it's difficult to project, but let's talk hypotheticals. What would be a possibility as far as a summer return? I mean, are you optimistic? Any idea when the league might restart and finish out the remainder of the 2019-20 season?
Yeah, that's still kind of a week-to-week kind of thing. There's been a lot of things discussed. You know, the NBA has you know, rightly so, done due diligence on a lot of options like maybe finishing this thing all in one city. You know, that one's gotten a lot of traction. Maybe we bring everybody that's going to play in a playoff game to Vegas, and we're in Vegas for a month, and everybody's kind of sequestered a little bit, and we play in one venue that can be controlled, and maybe fans aren't going to be a part of it, but we can finish a season. And, you know, when does that happen? That's there's kind of a clock that kind of works backwards to that. When do you hold the draft? I don't think anybody in the NBA believes the draft's going to happen in January or in June. You know, do you do a summer league? Does summer league now become a September league? You know, does the schedule as we have come to know it change dramatically where maybe we're not starting the NBA season in October? Maybe we're starting the NBA season the first part of December. So, again, it kind of goes back to that analogy of we've stopped the car. Now let's is there a better way to do this, because we're not always running into last year's schedule. So pushing all of this stuff into the summer a little bit. Personally, I think the NBA Finals should be played in June and July. I think it's July misses a great sports window, and I think it would be better for the NBA. So some of this, I think, will work itself out. But, you know, kind of the scenario that has to play out, all of the NBA teams owe games to their local broadcast partners. So they want to try to figure out a way to pay that game debt so that it doesn't roll into next year. Certainly the biggest number the NBA collects from a revenue point of view are those playoff games. So you want to figure out how to have as many of those as you possibly can and do it in a way that's safe and smart. And you don't want this thing running all the way to September, because you are going to have to reset and do it all again for a 2021 season. So there's just kind of a lot of things that just kind of bump into each other. I don't think anybody has a real plan yet. And I know that the NBA was the first to kind of pull the plug on its games. And I think the NBA will be one of the ones that's very diligent and deliberate about when the games come back. But everyone is motivated to get back sooner than later. So as soon as it makes sense and there's a plan that makes sense, I think you'll see the NBA, much as they drove, you know, coming off the court, I think they'll drive coming back onto the court and be one of those leagues that really stands out front, takes a lot of risk on it, because they're all unified that way.
Our special guest tonight, SB Nation Radio basketball insider Steve Kyler, is with us. And of course, Steve, this is a difficult and extraordinary time. We wonder, not only with the NBA, but all sporting events, the NFL, college football, I mean, when it will be played eventually in front of fans. But I have to wonder, I mean, how closely is the NBA paying attention to like the Taiwan Super Basketball League? I guess they are playing in a bubble. I mean, there's no fans, but there's a lot they can learn, perhaps, from the Taiwan League. What do you know about that?
Yeah, and certainly the NBA, because of the global nature of the game and just how everybody who works in the NBA came from another place and a lot of international influence. And, you know, basketball is a very small community given, you know, the number of really good players. And, you know, there was a watchful eye. The NBA wanted to see how the CBA, the Chinese league, handled theirs, and they tried to jumpstart their league and immediately pulled the plug, and that's something the NBA does not want to do. You want to evaluate what makes sense, not only from a how do we deliver the business we've promised to people, i.e. play those games for the television partners, but how do you take care of your players? How do you take care of your staff? You know, what's the right way? Can you really expect LeBron James to go get locked in a hotel for a month and not come out but to play a game? I mean, is that really what we want to do?
Right.
So watching things that work and are working well gives a little bit of a blueprint, but does it scale to what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do things? So I think a lot of it is kind of a wait and see. I think the interesting thing has been how out front Adam Silver has been in kind of leading the way with information and data and science and being deliberate and being open to new ideas. I think, you know, under a David Stern era, you know, there was, this is how we do it and this is the way we do it. You know, Adam Silver, since having the job, has been, because we've always done it this way is not a good answer. So very open-minded to new things and understanding that the NBA has to evolve and adapt to the market that exists. So some of this is going to force choices that maybe they wouldn't have made any other way that will maybe make the NBA better. But no question, the NBA is watching how anyone who's doing anything at this point is handling it, because they've got to then take some best practices and apply it to their world.
It's just wait and see. Give us a quick hit. We've only got about 30 seconds, but a pulse on the players. I mean, what are they doing to stay sharp and to stay fresh? Because they've got to stay ready.
Yeah, that's the biggest challenge of all of this. And, you know, I can speak personally, you know, John Henson, who plays for the Detroit Pistons, lives right around the corner from my house, and there are no gyms for him to train in. Even a pro-level guy that could spend whatever money he wants to spend, there are just no facilities available. They took the rims off the concrete courts to make sure people weren't out there playing through this.
Wow.
So a lot of teams, you know, when you look at Chris Paul, you look at LeBron James, they have, you know, huge homes that have basketball courts built into them. But if you're a rookie and you're living in an apartment, you know, it's a little bit different, and teams really can't assist as much as they want. You know, the hope here is in May that some of the restrictions on use of practice facilities and things like that. But a lot of guys are just training at home and trying to stay physically fit and run and lift weights, but hard to stay basketball sharp. And I think that's the one thing owners and everybody in decision making is, you can't just restart the league. We're going to have something of a training camp to get these guys back in shape. More importantly, so no one gets hurt.
Hey, basketball insiders, we're over on time. Steve Kyler has been with us tonight, SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. As always, thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. You can get guaranteed low, low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It is time to get you ready for the 2020 NFL Draft. And we are so delighted to welcome back. And that is Christian Dyer from Sports Illustrated. And we certainly appreciate you taking some time. But we also wanted to check on you and your family. Christian, how are you guys doing tonight?
Oh, we're holding up okay. We have enough bathroom tissue for about 6 months. That was the big run in the New York City market. I'm in North Jersey, but we had a big run on bathroom tissue, and now we're stocked up for the next 6 months. So I'm selling rolls right now on eBay.
Well, and you have a little guy, so I don't know if he's out of diapers yet. I mean, was there a shortage on that?
No, diapers were good. We stocked up pretty well. Timothy is 15 months old and running around the house, and he picked up a little foam football, you know, like one of those Nerf footballs. He's been running around the house with it, so he's got draft fever. It's definitely the most competitive sports we've had in quite a while, so we've been enjoying watching him running through the living room into the dining room and spiking the football. So he's got the celebrations down. That's exciting.
Well, that's good, and I bet little Timothy, he is enjoying this extra time with daddy, right?
We are. We're enjoying some extra time together. We're trying to keep him on a normal schedule. And my wife is an engineer and brilliant. She's an Ivy League graduate. She still works from home. I still have to work from home. So we've been fortunate to have our child care provider continues to come in a couple days a week. But we've cut her back so we can spend a little bit extra time with him as the schedule allows. And you try to look for the blessings from God through all of this. And, you know, Alyssa, a lot of people are suffering.
Yes.
There's been a lot of senseless and needless suffering and pain and death through all of this, but it's an opportunity for us to restock in our lives what's important. For me, that's my faith in the Lord and my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, and spend some extra time in prayer and dedication as a family, praying for those affected and doubling down on our faith.
That is beautiful. Hey, Christian Dyer from Sports Illustrated joining us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I know our audience is very excited to hear from you because you're going to give us the skinny, the breakdown on the 2020 NFL Draft. What do you think, Christian, is the biggest storyline in this year's draft?
I think there's a lot of unpredictability in this draft. After pick number one, which we all think is going to be Joe Burrow, the Heisman winner, the Maxwell Award winner, the top quarterback, the consensus number one player in the draft, it really becomes a very interesting draft. After I think a lot of people like Chase Young, at the number two pick, but there's also some thoughts that Jeff Okuda might be a really good fit there at number two. A team might want to trade up within those first two to three picks and take a look at Tua Tagovailoa, who was the Maxwell Award winner a year ago. So there's a lot of intrigue and moving pieces, as well as Isaiah Simmons, who to me is a physical specimen and a game changer and a real playmaker on defense. But I think it's about valuation. And every year, it seems like there's always extremes, Alyssa, at the quarterback position. Either teams overvalue a certain quarterback or two and there becomes a run on them, or they tend to drop down and then that makes a run midway through the first round, where some of these players begin to shuffle and reshuffle, and teams who thought an offensive tackle might be there at five or six end up now needing to kind of readjust their draft board and seeing what they need to do. So I think it could be a very volatile draft. I also think that from a perspective of talent evaluation, it's going to be limited. I mean, there was only a handful of major college pro days, Power 5 pro days after the combine, because everything got shut down with COVID-19 and social distancing. With the lack of pro days, some of these tier two and tier three prospects who either needed to improve on their combine showing or weren't invited to the combine and were counting on a pro day are going to be affected through all of this. So I think that there could be a real run this year, not just on quarterbacks or in the opening 10 picks, but also prominent players for prominent schools and maybe some of those group of five schools, such as the Houston or Central Florida or an SMU, Cincinnati, Temple, BYU, so on and so forth, that send multiple players to the draft every year. At the end of the day, they may get overlooked through the first 2 days of the draft, which could make a very unpredictable day three as well. So I think it's going to be must-see television this year. And there's nothing else on TV, so I think it is the only thing on TV.
Absolutely. Hey, Christian Dyer of Sports Illustrated with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hey, we'd love for you to chime in. Join us live at Twitter, at eRadio Sports. Info, eRadioSports.com, PodcastArena.com. Christian doing a great job, explaining to us, really, the ultimate position is the quarterback position, where perhaps that's the quickest way for a franchise to take their team to the next level. So you had mentioned Joe Burrow. Obviously, he's going to be the heavy favorite. But overall, when we look at this class of quarterbacks, how would you rate it?
Yeah, Burrow's the interesting one, but again, there's always red flags with everybody. And I think when you're looking at Joe Burrow, you're seeing someone who had 1 year of really high-level production. Now, it was outstanding. He rewrote an awful lot of passing records, all the prominent ones at LSU, but you're looking at a one-year window in an offense that's extremely quarterback-friendly with the playmakers and personnel that were head and shoulders above everyone, even in the SEC, and that says something. Now, Burrow did what he was supposed to do, but then you look at Tua Tagovailoa, who this time a year ago was a consensus number one pick in the draft. I know that there's been the injuries and the wrist injury that supposedly popped up a couple weeks ago that hasn't healed. You look at Tua's numbers, they certainly weren't at the level of a Joe Burrow, but his interception number was less. He didn't have the playmakers around him that the LSU offense had. But then there's question marks about Tua, his size, his injury history, where the best fit's going to be for him in a passing offense. He's a left-handed quarterback. That's another thing that kind of factors into with teams and how their offensive line is aligned. So there's questions there, and Justin Herbert and Jordan Love and other ones, so on and so forth. It's, I think if you look hard and deep enough, you're always going to find the speck, and I don't think that's going to be any different this year. I'm not sure, outside of Burrow, if there's one quarterback that you necessarily feel settled with, if you're a team that you'd be willing to move up into the top three, take a lot of picks, top four, use a lot of your draft collateral, especially if you're a rebuilding team, and eventually do that. Now, a team that could be interested could be a playoff team, such as New Orleans, Green Bay. I could see potentially a team like that trying to move up, were Tua to fall outside of those first five or six picks, get the Aaron pair into a Drew Brees or an Aaron Rodgers, let Tua sit for a year and develop, and then move him into a starting role. But I think any team that's going to get Tua is going to have to move an awful lot of pieces if they need to trade up, because I don't think he'll be there beyond six.
Okay, Sports Illustrated, Christian Dyer with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. So who would you pick first, Joe Burrow or Tua?
Well, I think it depends on your need, but if you're Cincinnati, I think you have to look at Joe Burrow. There's a couple things that are going to play here. A, his size. He's that prototypical pro-style quarterback. His feet are very good for someone his size. He can take off, and while he won't be in an RPO system in Cincinnati, at the end of the day, behind the offensive line that he would be inheriting, and I expect that to be addressed when the Bengals pick at 33, they'll probably be looking offensive line at some point. But, I think he's got the size and the build to be successful. He's got the arm strength to be able to play in the windy and cold weather in Cincinnati. And he's an Ohio guy, which gives a good storyline.
Yeah.
But it also means, unlike someone like Tua, who's played in the South, he would be acclimated to the weather, the climate, those conditions that you need. And a lot of people in the Northeast kind of make fun of Joe Flacco. But him being a guy from the New York, New Jersey area, playing in Delaware, going to Baltimore and playing playoff football in January and February, as opposed to some of these SEC and ACC quarterbacks, it was something that was natural for him and a real reason why Baltimore had a lot of playoff success. I think when you look geographically, Alyssa, that's something that's overlooked. In terms of quarterback,
yeah, good point.
Can be an asset.
Well, you got to give a shout out for my boy from Oklahoma. Come on, Boomer Sooner, Jalen Hurts. Does he have all the tools to be a difference maker? And what kind of impact could he potentially have in his rookie season?
Yeah, intriguing. I think Jalen Hurts is going to be one of those quarterbacks. We're going to know a lot more about him 2021 and probably 2022. I know that's a little bit of a cop-out answer. He certainly has done everything the right way. His workouts that he was able to have, combine showing, answered an awful lot of questions about him. I think Hurts throws a nice ball, good accurate ball placement down the field. He's somebody who I think with a year or two of seasoning could develop into a really good NFL quarterback. He has all the pieces, and I think that time in Oklahoma in that offense, and when you look at what Oklahoma has done the past few years, really becoming quarterback university with Kyler Murray,
yes,
Baker Mayfield, you know, just kind of the list goes on and on of who they've been able to produce. It was good for him to get out of that Alabama system, good for him to get out of, obviously, the way for Tua. Jalen Hurts was not going to be starting over Tua, but at the end of the day, he is going to need some work. The pieces are there. I'm convinced Jalen Hurts can be a starting quarterback in the NFL if he lands in the right environment. And that might be a team that's willing to let him sit for a year or two and develop. You know, maybe a good landing spot for somebody like a Jalen Hurts could be New Orleans, could be Green Bay, could be a team with a quarterback situation like Pittsburgh, where it may be a little bit, you know, closer to the end of the tunnel for a Ben Roethlisberger.
The 2020 NFL Draft, it's hard to believe it's going to be next week. We're going to find out what players teams will take to the next level. So let's move ahead. Let's talk about the New York Jets. They finished 7-9 in 2019. How are they approaching this year's draft?
Yeah, the Jets are kind of in that tricky, tricky spot. I think we're going to have an idea of what they're going to do by the time number 7 or number 8 rolls around. It was a team that closed out the year 6-2, beat up on some pretty poor opponents, did have good wins over the Oakland Raiders, Pittsburgh Steelers, and the Buffalo Bills, but only one of those three teams ended up making the playoffs. So the Jets are a team to have an awful lot of holes. Offensive tackle is going to be a big issue. This is general manager Joe Douglas's first full offseason with the team, Alyssa. He was brought in after the draft last year to replace Mike Maccagnan, and a little bit of an unusual move. You don't bring in a GM in summertime, so it's going to be the opportunity for him to put his stamp on this team. Left tackle is probably the most glaring need and issue on this roster. They've done a good job of addressing the rest of the offensive line with quality players, not stars, but quality players. And there's also going to be the need for a wide receiver, and this is a very good draft at wide receiver. I'm sure we'll touch on that. And edge rusher, where it's a little top-heavy, but there is some quality on day two and day three. If I'm the Jets, if one of those quarterbacks, either Tua Tagovailoa or Justin Herbert from Oregon, mm-hmm. were to slip down the draft board, I could see the Jets being in a position at 11 to perhaps make a move for a team that wants to trade up in a scenario where, let's say, a Bear would sit for a year and develop in a Green Bay in New Orleans. We keep mentioning those teams, but those are teams that could be looking to bring on board a young quarterback to groom and groom and mature. Could also be a scenario where Jerry Jeudy or CeeDee Lamb, the Oklahoma wide receiver, could be there at number 11, and a team like the Philadelphia Eagles could potentially want to trade up and get a playmaker for their offense. So the Jets being in no man land, just on the outside of the top 10, might be able to accumulate a couple day two, day three picks. And if they move back in the middle part of the first round, wouldn't surprise me to see them go after Josh Jones, the Houston tackle. He's a four-year starter on left tackle. A real mauler, moves very well. To me, he's a little bit of a sleeper. We talk about these first four offensive tackles in the draft, but Josh Jones is going to be a quality decade-long starter in the NFL if he can stay healthy.
Our NFL news and notes continues with Christian Dyer from Sports Illustrated after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're getting you ready for the 2020 NFL Draft. The countdown is on. We're going to continue the conversation with Sports Illustrated's Christian Dyer. Okay, so we talk about all the different endless possibilities that could take place next week in the draft. Get us up to date as far as what has been the focus in the offseason for the continued development of Sam Darnold. What kind of workouts is he able to get in right now?
Yeah, it's a little difficult right now because the NFL is essentially shut down. So you've got a quarterback in Sam Darnold. It's probably a good thing that the head coaching change and the general manager change took place last year. The Jets brought in Adam Gase, who's the quarterback whisperer, who was the offensive coordinator in Denver when Peyton Manning had that tremendous year, record-setting year in terms of his career. So being able to be into offense last offseason, I think, helped with his assimilation. You saw his comfort level over the final eight games of the year when he had 13 touchdowns and four interceptions. In the season where he had 19 touchdowns and 13 interceptions, he really flipped the script on that touchdown-to-interception ratio. So not being able to be at the facility to really communicate with the coaches in the same way, I think is probably going to stunt his development just a little bit, but it's better than him being a first year in the offense and going in potentially to training camp if the schedule remains the same and as anticipated, having to learn things from scratch. So right now it's probably going to be a lot of film review for Darnold, and if he can continue to cut back on those interceptions and have a little bit of an uptick in touchdowns, it would be considered a good 2020.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see if he'll be able to find success with this head coach in 2020, and hopefully the season will start on time. Our very special guest this evening from Sports Illustrated has been Christian Dyer. Christian, let's pause as we wrap up our interview, and how can our audience connect with you and find so many of your articles online?
Yeah, anyone who wants some Jets content can go to si.com/NFL/Jets. Multiple stories going up and news and information about players and draft prospects as well, not just the Jets. So hopefully some people will check it out and like what they see and not leave too many nasty messages.
Oh, go easy. Hey, our special guest from Sports Illustrated has been Christian Dyer. We're up against the clock. Much more we want to get into. We will catch up after the draft next week. Thank you so much, Christian.
Thank you, Alyssa, and everybody stay safe out there and wash your hands.
Absolutely. That, of course, was Sports Illustrated's Christian Dyer. A big thank you to all of our amazing guests and our lineup. As a reminder, be safe out there, and we'll see you next weekend.